From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Seven women have accused a former Juneau area chiropractor of sexually abusing them while he was working at the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SERCH. Jeffrey Fultz, who goes by Jeff, was working for SERCH until 2020. Last April, Juneau police heard from a Juneau woman who said he sexually assaulted her while she was receiving medical care from him. After that first investigation, Fultz faced three charges of sexual assault and one harassment charge. But Assistant District Attorney Jessalyn Gillum said that after those charges became public, four more women stepped forward saying they were also abused by Fultz. During a court hearing on Monday, Gillum said that there are other less physically obvious similarities between the women's stories. She said the women accused Fultz of touching them inappropriately, but then disguising it as normal medical care, making it difficult for them to distinguish between the two. Six of the seven women accusing Fultz of abuse are Alaska Native. Altogether, Fultz is facing eight felony sexual assault charges and one count of harassment. He was arraigned this afternoon, and currently he's out on bail. He's allowed to live out of state in New Mexico. But some of the women who are accusing him of sexual assault have asked twice in court that his bail be raised and that he be returned to Juneau because they consider him a risk to the community that he lives in. Gillum also asked the court to raise his bail during the arraignment today. She asked that he be told to put up another $25,000 in cash, that he be returned to Juneau, and if freed, that he be put on an ankle monitor. But Judge Daniel Shalley disagreed with those arguments. Among other things, Shalley said he believes it will be better for alleged victims in Juneau if Fultz is not here. Fultz has surrendered his license to practice as a chiropractor in Alaska. This year's permanent fund dividend would be $1,100 under a compromise budget proposal that the legislature will vote on this week. A committee composed of both senators and House members agreed yesterday to a budget that would set the dividend at less than half the amount that Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed and that the Senate passed during the regular session. But it keeps the annual draw from permanent fund earnings within a limit set in a 2018 law. Fairbanks Republican Representative Bart Lebon said that drawing more than planned to pay a larger dividend would threaten the long-term health of the permanent fund.
Protection of the permanent fund itself is a high priority in my thinking, and this accomplishes that.
The committee passed an amendment to the budget that would make most of the dividend funding dependent on spending money from a state piggy bank known as the Constitutional Budget Reserve, or CBR. Senator Bert Stedman said the amendment could build support for this vote.
It certainly encourages some folks to seriously consider what position they're going to take on the CBR.
The CBR vote preserves funds for dozens of programs that pay for everything from offsetting the cost of electricity in rural areas to university scholarships. But members of the Republican House minority have withheld their votes the past 2 years in efforts to pay higher dividends. And if the CBR vote fails, dividends would be $525. Adjusted for inflation, that would be the lowest PFD in the program's history. In addition, the compromise budget would transfer $4 billion from the permanent fund's earnings reserve. That reserve is not protected from legislative spending. The money would be transferred to the fund's constitutionally protected principal. Members of both chambers will have a chance to vote on the changes this week. Committee members have expressed hope that the budget will pass before Thursday, when state workers are scheduled to receive layoff notices. About 11,000 unemployed Alaskans will stop receiving an extra $300 per week as part of a federal program designed to boost incomes during the pandemic. Federal funding for the program ends in September, but Alaska opted to end the program after this week, joining at least 24 other states. The states argue that the additional $300 per week in benefits is an incentive for people to stay on unemployment insurance rather than return to work. They say that's creating a labor shortage. But some economists have cast doubt on that assertion, pointing to data that show a lack of childcare and fear of catching COVID are also big factors in keeping people from returning to the workforce. The benefits will be paid through the end of this week, and unemployed workers can still receive regular unemployment benefits. A gathering was held in Fairbanks yesterday to mourn and raise awareness about historic abuse, neglect, and forced assimilation of Native children at government and church-run residential schools in the U.S. and Canada. The Fairbanks event and others like it in both countries followed the discovery last month of the remains of 215 Indigenous children buried at a residential school in British Columbia. KUAC's Dan Bross has that story.
The event began with the tying of 215 bandanas to a clothesline, which was then strung along a footbridge over the Chena River in downtown Fairbanks. It's a symbolic gesture of acknowledgement and remembrance of the children found dead at the residential school in Kamloops, British Columbia. Event organizer Sasha Housley addressed the gathering, emphasizing generations of pain and loss residential schools have caused Native peoples in Canada and the U.S.
We acknowledge you. We help carry your pain. We are your hope. We sing for you the songs you couldn't sing at school. We will not forget your story, your history, for it is our story as well.
Housley says her father was a boarding school survivor in Alaska, and although he never talked about his experience, she's educated herself on residential schools.
So when I found out the 215 children had been discovered in unmarked graves, it impacted me in a way I didn't expect, deeper than I expected, and I wanted to do something to, in memory of the children, and to spread awareness.
Sunday's event included the symbolic hanging of 215 bandanas along a footbridge across the Chena River in downtown Fairbanks. There were also songs, prayers, dancing, and speakers, including Athabascan Elder Fred John of Delta Junction. John attended residential schools in both Alaska and the Lower 48, including Haskell Institute in Kansas, where he says many Native kids died.
Graveyard with a tombstone, you know, and there were kids that died from 1884 in Haskell Institute. Then one year, my wife and I went to Carlisle Indian School, the first Indian boarding school that was made in the United States. And we visited the grave there, big graveyard. All Native kids from 5 years, 4 years on up, from all across the United States.
John says his siblings also went to residential schools, and their experiences led to tragic outcomes.
I had two sisters that I'll say drank themselves to death, and all of them became alcoholic as a result of the boarding school.
It was the government's effort to try to take the savage out of the Indian.
Shirley Mae Holmberg has a background in behavioral health and says she knows many people who were traumatized at residential schools.
I have friends and family that have been affected by boarding schools, the experience, sexual abuse, physical abuse.
The government sought to destroy our people through violence and genocide and cultural genocide.
Natasha Singh with Tanana Chiefs Conference said the only way to bring justice is to tell the story of what happened at residential schools, and pointed to the resilience of Native people to systematic oppression.
It's a beautiful day today because they failed, and we continue to thrive.
The 215 bandanas, symbolic of the residential school children who died in British Columbia, will remain along the Chena River footbridge until the solstice, a span of 215 hours. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And finally today, the Coast Guard announced on Friday that they've received permission from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to no longer enforce the mandate that requires anyone traveling on commercial maritime vessels, including ferries, to wear a mask in outdoor areas. The requirement for most people to wear masks indoors for the duration of travel, including boarding and disembarking the vessel, is still in place. The exceptions include eating and drinking, identity verification, and for speaking to someone who's hard of hearing. Masking up in outdoor areas on the vessel or on the dock or port, though, will no longer be required. It will take some time for the CDC to formally revise the executive order and CDC mandates that initially required masking up outdoors on maritime vessels. Until then, the CDC said they will not compel the Coast Guard to enforce outdoor masking requirements. It's currently partly sunny in Juneau, 68 degrees at the airport, but the rain is coming. 90% chance of precipitation tonight, mainly after 7 p.m. Rain could be heavy at times with up to 3/4 of an inch possible.